Next case for argument this morning is Mogg against Astru.
Good morning. Please support. My name is Pitt. I got the nod from another judge.
Mr. Mulvaney.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Patrick Mulvaney. I represent Larry Mogg in his appeal from the judgment of the United States District Court for the Southern District of Indiana, which denied his application for an award of an EAJA attorney fee. We contend the District Court abused its discretion in denying this application. The recent case of Sosby against Astru requires reversal of this case. Sosby demonstrates that this Court will reverse the District Court's denial of an EAJA attorney fee or abuse of discretion. Sosby explains, applied to this case, that a District Court's application of an erroneous view of the law is by definition an abuse of discretion. We contend that the District Court abused its discretion in denying the petition, that it was not reasonable for it to misstate the basis for this Court's remand order, stating that it was simply an issue of misarticulation when, in fact, this Court ruled that it was an error of law, and it was not reasonable to ignore, for the District Court to ignore, established Seventh Circuit precedent, such as the Riboto case, which was contrary to the ALJ's decision, which necessarily rendered the Commissioner's pre-litigation and litigation positions to be without substantial justification.
It sounds like you argued, like you've just argued, and parts of your brief could be read as saying that every time an agency loses a case, it must have lacked substantial justification. But, of course, Pierce against Underwood rejected that very argument. How could we accept it here? We're not in the business of defying the Supreme Court.
No, Your Honor. We're arguing that it has long been the precedent of this Court that in a Step 3 decision, in a Social Security disability case, the judge must state the particular listing he's considering and must adequately, meaningfully apply the law.
Our prior decision held that the agency was mistaken and that a remand was required.
I'm sorry?
But what?
So this Court in the...
Our prior decision held that the agency was mistaken and a remand was required. But what other than that do you have for the proposition that the agency's position was not substantially justified?
Because they violated this Court's precedent.
Well, because they lost. But that's the very argument that Pierce against Underwood rejected. There's a large category of cases, Pierce said, where the agency loses, but its position was nonetheless arguable.
No, Your Honor, it's the way it lost. It refused. The agency violated this Court's law. Just as in the second Golombuski case, in which the Court said, actually, our opinion does not reveal a complex case, but one in which the ALJ and the Commissioner violated clear and long-standing judicial precedent. And it determined under those circumstances the district judge decision denying the EAJ attorney fee was an abuse of discretion. This is not contrary to Pierce.
What's happened to this, by the way, on remand? What's the current status of this before the agency?
It's going to be heard in early February.
You mean
6 years after
he
applied.
A new evidentiary hearing before an ALJ?
Yes, Your Honor. It'll be before, it turns out, a different ALJ, but yes.
Mm-hmm.
As a consequence of this Court's remand. This Court ruled it had to be reversed at Step 3 because the ALJ did not state what listing he was considering and did not meaningfully discuss the evidence in relation to that listing. However, the District Court said this Court reversed because the Seventh Circuit held that the ALJ failed to adequately articulate the basis for his finding that Mogg's impairments did not meet or equal a medical listing at Step 3. The Court's criticism focused on the fact that the ALJ not only failed to specify the relevant Social Security listings, but also failed to properly evaluate certain documents. The Seventh Circuit's opinion did not reject the Court's determination that there was substantial evidence in the record supporting the ALJ's decision. In fact, this Court never reached that issue because it decided the case based on an error of law, not on substantial evidence. The court, district court, bootstraps this some evidence argument into it, therefore a genuine dispute argument, therefore into substantial justification, justifying a denial of an EHAA fee. This court repeatedly made clear that it needed to know how an ALJ decided the case. What was its analysis? What was the law that was applied to the facts of the case to come up with the conclusion? District Court, the Commissioner, confused this analysis requirement with articulation, which is not the same thing. Perfunctory analysis speaks to analysis that's unthinking, mechanical, automatic, not to articulation, which speaks to whether or not it was clear, coherent, fluid, expressive, or communicative. We believe that the district court's decision, finding of substantial justification, is abuse of discretion because it, in effect, upholds the commissioner's violation of the law, and that can never be reasonable, which is the definition of abuse of discretion in Marcus' case cited, where it says that if there's any reasonable basis for it, the decision, it will not be held to be an abuse of discretion. In this case, it couldn't be reasonable to approve a violation of the law. I think there are reserved balance of my time. Unless there are other questions. Thank you.
Ms. Wang Grimm.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Mulvaney. I'm Jesse Wang Grimm, here today on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. The Commissioner is confident that the District Court in no way abused its discretion in finding here that the agency's position was substantially justified. The District Court correctly construed this Court's merits decision and correctly applied the substantial justification standard. And the merits appeal boiled down to one reason for remand. The Court wanted a more thorough explanation at Step 3. And we're asking for this Court to find, for the same reasons that the District Court did, that the award of fees under EJA was not warranted here. As the case law bears out, not enough articulation does not automatically equate with there being no rational basis for assuming that the agency's decision should be defended. I'd like to distill things down to what we're talking about and what we're not talking about in this case. The good news is that we're not in a situation where we're in the dark about what the listings are, the ones that are at issue. It's clear, based on the two listings raised by Mr. Mogg at the administrative hearing and that the medical expert addressed in his testimony in response to Mr. Mogg's questions, that we are solely dealing with listings 102 and 104. This is not the case where we don't have any analysis at Step 3, Your Honors, and where all we're left with is some bare, unsupported conclusion. The ALJ expressly referred to and adopted the orthopedic specialist Dr. Stack's testimony on the listings. And Dr. Stack provided an evidence-based explanation for his opinion that none of the listings were met or equaled. He looked at listing 102. He opined the evidence didn't bear out an extreme inability to ambulate effectively. And the evidence showed that Mr. Mogg, despite using a cane in one hand, not all of the time, was able to carry out his daily activities. He looked at listing 104. And
does the agency ever use English? I mean, he lacks the ability to ambulate. Can't the agency just say he has trouble walking?
Well, that's what I'm stuck with, Your Honor, but...
No, you're not. It's actually an important part of an appellate lawyer's function to translate specialized agency bureaucracies into English for a bunch of generalists.
Well, the agency defines the inability to ambulate effectively as an extreme limitation of the ability to walk. So what we're talking about is something that interferes very seriously with his ability to independently initiate, sustain, or complete activities. And here what the ALJ found, as the medical expert also opined, that Mr. Mogg wasn't limited to that extent. The evidence didn't bear that out. So I hope that clarifies some of our terminology a little bit more clearly for you, Judge Easterbrook. As I was saying, he also looked at Listing 104, and he found that the neurological findings in the examinations were normal, and so that listing's criteria also weren't met or equaled. Now, this isn't the case where other evidence in the record showed that every single criterion of the listings were met. No medical opinion supports that conclusion. What we have is a reasonable medical expert who tells us that the full criteria were not satisfied for either listing. The ALJ didn't wholly fail to evaluate evidence that might have supported Mr. Mogg's claim. This court admonished the agency in its merits decision, but acknowledged nonetheless that the evidence in question was considered and rejected, and there was a reason given for that rejection. There were several reasons. Now, the court has asked the agency for a more thorough explanation, and that's why this case went back down on remand. But when we look to the legal precedent, there is no hard and fast rule defining perfunctory analysis at step three. And cases like Stein and Cunningham and Conrad explain a flexible articulation standard. Cases like Sheck and Rice talk about the fact that in some cases, very, very minimal step three articulation has passed scrutiny here. So the agency did have a rational basis for moving forward on a legal basis. And then when we look to the facts, what we are down to is that this court found three items of evidence the ALJ did evaluate, did reject, but needed to explain a little bit more about. And that's our singular deficiency. Flesh out the explanation. The panel didn't leave us with the finding that we couldn't come back with more, with the same conclusion. So I would finally just say that the extent of articulation required at step three is a little bit more flexible than that we would require in the credibility assessment. And we feel our case falls squarely within a comfort zone of Seventh Circuit precedent. On balance, the district court did not abuse its discretion. I could answer any other questions that the court might have at this point. Otherwise, we rest on our brief. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Mulvaney?
This court specifically rejected the argument that she just made. They argued that because the ALJ could rely on the medical expert who discussed the listings, this court could trace the reasoning of the ALJ. And this court said, oh, no, we can't, because the ALJ didn't state what listing he was considering. And he made only a perfunctory explanation. He didn't explain why that Mogg's impairments did not meet or equal a listing. Therefore, he violated the law. It's not because of his articulation. This court said even a sketchy opinion's okay, as long as we know what he's trying to say, as long as we know what law's involved, we know how he applied it to the evidence. We don't care if he's a bad writer. We don't care. We just want him to follow our law. It cited Roboto, which is a 2006 case, which relied on earlier cases from this court. There is no flexible standard. You say what the listing is, and you explain the law relating to that listing. Now, there's a lot of flexibility in this articulation thing they keep going on and what the district court relied on, but that's not what this court based its decision on. And, of course, this court said, well, look, you know, you didn't explain why you threw out this evidence. That goes to the perfunctory analysis issue, not to whether or not the judge wrote a good decision or not, or a clear or scholarly or something understandable. Now, we think that the case that we just pointed out, the case decided by the commissioner, Sheck, Rice, Sanchez, and Marcus, as explained in our brief, do not support its arguments. And further, the cases cited by the district court do not support its decision in this case, because none of them involved an ALJ's failure to follow the law. Now, you know, that's illegal behavior. That can never be reasonable, sufficient to overcome abuse of discretion. Anytime you approve illegal behavior, and that would be considered to be an abuse of discretion. That's all we have. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.